Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In the virtual studio with me right now, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Josie the librarian.
Hey there.
So before we get into some literacy talk, I put a call out. I want to hear about coronavirus play that's going on, because I knew it was going to happen. It started. So I heard from somebody this morning that the boys yesterday were playing Corona Tag.
What does that mean?
I haven't got the rules yet, but I've scheduled some time to learn more about it. But it's a coronavirus based game of tag. I'm guessing you get tagged and you've got the virus.
But you have to tag, maybe using your hands.
I was talking to Tasha about it earlier, and she suggested a way. So I think I mean we could come up with five ways to play that game right now, just thinking about it. And I'm interested to see what the kids come up with. And I'd really like to track this to see if similar games start popping up in different parts of the country as this unfolds. Because I mean, kids play it, whatever's in their heads, and this is getting a lot of play, so it's in their heads. And then I heard from somebody just a little bit ago about her 3-year-old granddaughter turns 3 tomorrow, and she was singing Coronavirus to the tune of Farmer in the Dell earlier today.
Ah.
And
how would that go? The farmer in the dell, the farmer in the hi ho,
the coronavirus. I actually just messaged her before we started recording tonight to please get me an audio recording if she hears it happening again.
So my nerd brain, and I realize Josie's here, but I want to talk about this.
Oh, Josie likes a good nerd brain.
Well, the task group that I'm involved with, the Association for the Study of Play, I mean, some of the people who've been in that group since its inception, like, there's people there who, like, that is what they study, like the games that emerge during trauma times, during times of war, during times of crisis, you know, and just how it's so therapeutic for the children. And of course, our first instinct, of course, I can't say that to present company, but sometimes we want to shut it down, or we're like, my God, if I hear that coronavirus song one more time, yeah. You know, and it's our first instinct is like, but we forget how much healing is happening for the kids. I mean, and it's bringing up, tonight before we got started, our roommate was saying that his daughter's graduating from high school, but check it out. I did not put this together. They started their life right at 9/11, mm-hmm. and they're graduating from high school during coronavirus. And I was like, holy crap, that's some traumatic bookends. And I remember the 9/11 play. I mean, you know, we...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I figure at some point we'll end up doing a whole episode on that topic, but I just wanted to throw those out there since I just heard about them today.
Well, I will add really fast, just since I am here. I mean, I have an almost 7-year-old, and she's scared shitless. I mean, they're here. I mean, despite everything we do to make this a calm, safe environment, their whole lives are turned upside down. So
it's 24/7.
Yeah,
I'm telling people, turn the TV off. Turn it
off. If we are taking that play away from them, we're doing such a disservice, because even, like I said, at almost 7, whenever we go outside, she's been playing a game where she goes, can it see me? Can it see me? And it took me a while to figure out what she was talking about. It is the coronavirus.
The virus. Oh,
she's,
my God.
You know, so she's playing, like, She's hide pretending to hide. Yeah.
I got to make a note of that one, too. Can it see me?
Can it see me?
All right. So what's our early literacy talk? What are we talking about?
Our favorite childhood books.
Yeah. Anne likes red.
Who the what?
Anne likes red.
Anne likes red was one of my most favorite books. And I've probably regaled the story 1,000 times of when I had that bookseller guy. He found the copy of that book based on like one picture that I remember.
Uh-huh.
I told that story. Remember that story?
Yes.
And I'm like, it was about this, Henny, what he was going to do and the pancakes. And the guy was like, give me a couple weeks. I can find this for you. And he did. And it was the, Do You Know What I'm Going to Do Next Saturday, which was originally written by Dr. Seuss's first wife who committed suicide. But that's a story for another day. But yeah, all those black and white pictures. So it wasn't necessarily a favorite book, but it was definitely a book that had a lot of memory associated. Uh-huh. With it. Mog the Forgetful Cat was definitely one of my favorite books. In the playbook, I actually talk about how when my parents moved and all my siblings and I as adults ended up helping them move, and we had not, you know, seen and interacted with our childhood library since we were little. And so none of us helped our parents load the truck. We were all sitting there like, do you remember this one? And do you remember this one? And do you remember this one? And very, very specific memories associated with certain pictures within the book, like not the book in general, but like this page I remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got tons. I'll let you share some and Jeff as well. I was gonna say, Jeff, you got any?
Yep. Go ahead, Jeff.
I don't think I had a fuck to give about books until about fourth grade. Yeah. I mean, I think I dug Green Eggs and Ham, but I remember there being books around, but I don't think I cared enough until I was actually reading books. In like third or fourth grade that I even cared to remember any. Does that explain a lot about me? Maybe. I don't know. I think I was just more interested.
I think that's typical of boys, not to make a gender conversation, but I think until you really find a topic or something that might not really manifest until you're older a little bit to where you can self-select, you know, like this is what I'm interested in, so I want to read this. That doesn't surprise me at all, Jeff.
Oh, good. I thought we were going to have to go into some deep therapy in this episode.
not this week.
Try to figure out what I was blocking out. Because I remembered around third or fourth grade, it just clicked, and then I was like reading everything, and there weren't a lot of pictures in it, and then the internet happened, and I quit reading. Don't read anything anymore. No. But Josie, what are yours?
Well,
yes, the list.
I do have a list, but Lisa, it's very much like what you were saying. Okay, now this first book I remember everything about. It was Imogene's Antlers by.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah,
and I love that that book has come out. Like they've reprinted it. You can get it in Scholastic Book Orders again. So I was able to share it with Juliet. I was so excited, but I loved that book. I loved the little girl that, you know, if you're unfamiliar with the story, she wakes up one morning and she has antlers and her family has to figure out what to do about it. And, what I remember
when she's sliding down the banister, yes. I can see that page in my head right now.
Yes. What I loved about it is it has a slightly unsettling ending, just in the sense she wakes up, her antlers are gone, but there's something else wrong. I can't remember. I think maybe she has a peacock tail or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a child, I liked that feeling like, oh no, is she ever going to be okay? Or will she always wake up with something weird? And it was the first time a book made me, I think, feel unsettled like that.
Have a big thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. I think that respects kids, that unsettling ending, that kind of cliffhanger ending. I don't like it when things are wrapped up too neatly with a pretty bow on them.
And I think it's funny that those tend to be the books that I gravitate towards now still. I like short stories. I like books that are kind of creepy. And I sometimes
have a twist.
Yeah. And I sometimes wonder if maybe that was what started it, you know, just trying to recreate that feeling.
Well, so, I mean, the end of Imogene's Antlers is exactly, I mean, just exactly like the end of the Sopranos series.
Yeah. Yeah.
It Which sure I is. Didn't watch, so
we won't spoil Sopranos.
Lisa Murphy, if you're homebound for a while, you need to fucking watch Sopranos.
No.
Oh my God, you love it.
I probably would, but I lived it. No, I'm just kidding. Inside joke. Never mind.
So what is, what else? I want to talk about that some more. That, what is there about that end, that kind of ending that grabs people?
Well, because
it's a surprise. It's a surprise, or it's a twist, or you weren't expecting it, or
but it gives you a chance to, it gives you a chance to kind of continue the story in your head.
Yeah. Yes. I think that, I mean, that is it for me. You know, it doesn't wrap it up with a nice bow. So you're thinking about it days afterwards, like, ooh, I wonder what if.
And that's why Josie has to also go read fan fiction as well, because
then she gets to read all the what ifs that were in the heads of the
everybody else reading everybody else's what ifs.
Sure.
Yeah.
I liked Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And the little house. Do you remember that one? The little house on the hill. And it was the country house, and then all the city grew up around it. But the
yes,
house there. I liked that one.
I liked Madeline.
Oh, I love I still like Madeline.
I think that was probably my very favorite. Looking like I can still hear it in my head. I loved the rhythm. I loved that sing-song text. And I was really sad that I was never going to be a little French girl in a boarding school who everyone sent her presents.
But did you have your appendix taken out?
No, and I always wanted it because of that book.
Not a fan.
No.
Not a fan of Madeline, or yeah. you don't know the book?
Oh, no, I know the book, not a fan.
Well, do you know what,
appendix, but...
Do you know what Madeline would say to you, Jeff?
No, but I also don't care, but you can tell me.
She would say poo-poo, just like she says to the lion in the zoo.
Well, yeah, me and that lion, me and Cecil were together. I'm sure the illustrations, I think I dug them, but I don't think the story did anything for me. There weren't any explosions or something. I don't know.
You're a boy.
Such a boy.
I did
have. Have you ever found, I'm interrupting. Have you ever found that you've wanted to get a book in front of the children because of your own, like, crazy love for that particular book? Like, you want the kids to love it as much as you loved it?
And they don't care.
Well, sometimes they get into it.
I was thinking about a particular one, but yes.
So I had my grandma, before she died, she read all of our favorite storybooks, and she put it on a cassette tape, so of course nobody can listen to it anymore. But my grandma was an actress, and so she wasn't an actress like by trade, but she was on the radio during the war, blah 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 blah. Anyway, so she was very dramatic in her reading, and she could do accents, and she was very good without being cheeseball when she would read to you. And she loved to read The Very Jolly Postman, because then she would read all the letters that the postman put in the envelope. She would read them all in different character voices. And when I first read it to the children a thousand years ago, I read it because I was like, I think the kids are going to like this book. But then when I was saying, you know, my grandma read this to us. And so the kids started calling it the grandma book. So go get the grandma book, read us the grandma book. And I found that I always had an appreciation for when those, like, I called them inside jokes that never resonated with groups after that group of children, but that year that group called it the grandma book, you know. But it never was like that ever again, you know what I'm saying? But the point I'm trying to get at is that we have to be careful to make sure that we're not trying to get them to like it either because we like it or trying to circle back to the bit that was funny. Just because last year's group thought that was a really funny page doesn't mean that this year's group, you know, so we have to let it unfold organically and not try and force connections to books. Even though maybe years past there have been really, really tight connections, it doesn't necessarily mean those are going to, you know, continue forward with new groups of kids.
That's a really good point.
Of course it is.
No, I'm just duh. Lisa, aren't you offended? She sounded kind of surprised.
No, I was not surprised. It just made me think about, my mom loved the Amelia Bedelia books. And she would always try to share them with me, and I knew they were important to her. So I would always try to like them, but I can remember laying there as a kid just thinking, oh, is this almost over so we can read something else? You know, I mean, you just have to, like you said, let it unfold organically. And if it works, it works. Don't try to force it. I think about that. When I was teaching fifth grade, every year I always liked to read Where the Red Fern Grows to them. I've probably talked about that before.
Yes, because you like to make the little boys cry. Yes.
I did, yeah. Yeah, it was great. but I will say, I had one group that just wasn't into it. And I didn't finish.
You gotta let it go.
I didn't finish the book because I was like, it's not going to happen this year.
Well,
and that's
good
okay.
on you.
Did you give them failing grades?
No.
You should have to teach them a lesson.
No.
You're a teacher. You're not respected. You had one little bit of power. You could have punished them for not liking your book, and you should have.
I was everybody's favorite teacher because I was nice.
And the system ate you up and spit you out.
That I will say that was also my last year teaching because I had a newborn baby, and I was getting to the point where I just didn't care anymore. So
these kids don't like Where the Red Fern Grows. I quit.
Yeah, that's exactly sure how it went.
So I was thinking about this. I said, I don't remember a lot of books. Green Eggs and Ham was one of them. And in our family child care days, one of my favorite kids during that time was Sam. And he fucking loved that book.
Sure.
And I think the reason he was, I mean, there's lots of reasons, probably he was one of my favorite kids, but we freaking bond. I didn't think about that till now, but we freaking bonded over that book because I loved not only the book, but I loved reading it out loud. And we would, I mean, just, he'd be like, again, and then we'd do it 20 times in a row. And it was great.
Relationships.
Huh. They matter. Sam, I think, is going to graduate from high school this year.
Yay. Oh, man.
Jeff is old. So any more on this one?
No, I just kind of want to hear your guys' thoughts. And Lisa hit on it right away, what I was thinking about. It's funny how, you know, we stress so much about what to read to kids. And it doesn't really matter because they're not going to remember 99% of the books you read to them when they're 3, 4, 5 years old, but they will remember that they were read to.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was a book and it was kind of like Lisa's story. I spent all afternoon trying to find this book. It turns out it's called Grandfather Twilight. And it was about an old man who put the moon in the sky every night. And all I could remember was one picture, but I can remember sitting on my mom's lap. I liked those pictures so much, looking at those pictures over and over and over again. The story itself didn't matter, but
yep.
I have that memory.
Yeah, it's that process. When our kids were growing up, Tasha.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Go on. Froze. You went out after, oh, dude.
Just talk.
Oh, well, you stop. I don't know what I was going to say.
You were talking about Tasha.
Oh, when the kids were little, she, every night that was their thing. And I got kind of jealous because I liked reading them too, but I did at other times, but bedtime was like story time with mom. And that was the fucking most important part of the day almost for, I mean, years. And that process, that experience, that time is is what matters and not the titles of the books.
Agreed.
I guess that's an episode.
I guess we're, yeah.
Hooray.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. If you have any children playing coronavirus-based games or engage in any activities, message me about it, because I don't know why. And, you know, 6 weeks from now, I might not care. But right now, as we're recording this, I really, really am excited to hear more about this stuff as it goes on and try to collect it and document a little bit of it. So thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing the show. And if you remember what your favorite picture book was back when you were a youngin', let us know, but not if you're, I mean, you got to be over 25 or 30. Otherwise you're too young and it's too easy for you to remember. If you're young, you can still message us, because that's cool that you're young and you're listening to us old people talk. So to sum it up, everybody's included, not just the old people. There, goodbye.
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 This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.